All right, we'll call to order the Affordable Housing Collaborative meeting, October 28th, 7 p.m. We'll do a quick roll call here, and we'll start, Josh, on your end. We'll just go around here.
Josh Daly, Planning Board.
Callie Babbitt-Spears.
Alicia Johnson.
Kenny Burke.
Christian Blaney.
And Brian Wagner for the Planning Department.
All right, very good. So first up is the approval of our minutes from our last meeting. Everybody get to read them, and did anybody see anything that looked like it needed to be edited or changed?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All right, we have a motion to approve. Second. Meeting minutes are approved from the last meeting.
Well, we had a motion and a second. Did we have a vote?
Oh, did we do a vote? I'm sorry. Shall we have a vote? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
In favor? Okay. Yeah. All right. So as you guys have probably heard, so Jen Kruger did resign, and I know Brian sent the letter out. I'm allowed to mention this. We do have somebody new coming in who was sworn in.
Was appointed at the meeting on Monday, but has not yet been sworn in.
Okay.
Her name is Megan Sparks, and she's a real estate agent in the area who has done work with the Johnny Cake Center. So she is somebody that Jen sent our way.
So Jen left, but she promised us she was replacing herself with somebody really good. So that was nice. All right, so old business. So let's get back at the Affordable Housing Fund application forms. Brian, thank you for sending out the updated version. And I compared the two. I don't know if everybody did the same. I took a look at this newer rubric versus the older one, the one that we worked on last meeting. And it does seem much easier to read. and I think much easier to score. It's just a little less complex. And I have to say, as I was reading through this stuff, I'm hoping you guys were thinking the same thing. Reminding myself, because we do get in the weeds with these things, that there is the human element to the decisions. The rubric is, you know, certainly designed to help. A, it's going to help guide us make decisions on the fund requests. And B, it will also allow us to have some backup information for why we made the decision, right? But ultimately, there's going to be discussion. So I think the point that I'm getting to is, as complex and detailed as we make this thing, it's never going to be perfect, and it's never going to really make the decision for us. So, yeah.
And I'll point out that I threw points in, sort of weighted them as I thought might be appropriate. Certainly, if people here think that they are should be weighted differently, that should be a part of the discussion tonight. I threw in numbers and made it add up to 100.
Yes.
it doesn't need to add up to 100. It doesn't need to add up to any particular amount because, you know, you're going to wind up comparing the points awarded to the maximum available.
Yeah. 100 points seems nice because you can give it an A, an A minus, a B. I mean, it's very, you know, it's
we're all familiar with that.
The only two that I had questions on, and I really like this, and the explanations, some of the stuff in there was very helpful. And I mean, as far as how they're weighted, I mean, I think as far as I can see, they're weighted appropriately. And again, we can change this form down the line. If we get into projects and we think certain things need to be added or subtracted, we can do that. At the bottom, the two that are worth 10, the ownership units percentage for set price or percentage for set rental, I think each project is really going to be either or for the most part, right? So in those cases, so for example, if it's a rental that we're looking at, are we just not including the sale one? And I guess what that would mean is we're really going on a 90-point total because it's going to be one or the other for those two.
I realize that, and I thought that I had amended that before I sent it out, but I guess I didn't.
Okay.
I think you're right. I think it should be condensed to one row. which would mean you either up it to 20 points or you leave it at 10 and spread your other 10 points out someplace else to something else that maybe you think is undervalued in the hierarchy of things. I also had thoughts as to whether or not the list, the scoring list, was maybe trying to do too much, and maybe there weren't some ways to simplify it and eliminate some things. So I don't know what members' thoughts are on that.
My question, to kind of go off of that, so the last three sections where we have the percentage of AMI used to set sale, percentage rental, and then monthly cost burden to owner-tenant. When we're asking the question of what percentage of AMI is being used to set that price, is that to identify whether or not that is 30% of someone's income?
Or the monthly cost burden would look at, you know, how much it's impacting their income. The percentage of AMI is, you know, when you create a sale unit, there's a range of AMI levels you can put it in. So if somebody that's using 80% of the AMI would theoretically score higher than somebody who's using 120% of AMI.
Right.
All of the rentals are going to be at 80% of AMI. I mean, maybe that's a simplification. Maybe you don't even need to talk about rentals.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Although there's nothing that prevents anybody from going below 80%. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody wanted to do 50% of AMI to really target lower income people, mm-hmm. they're certainly free to do that. They just can't go any higher than 80.
Gotcha. Thank you.
I like the sale price one being in there because in my mind, when we were working on this to start with, I was really thinking of tiny projects. Probably because we have, like, no money. but I think that this is what's nice about having the sale price in there is if the fund turns into something and we start to actually accumulate funds and we start to look at larger projects, I think that is an important thing to put in there. And that's set per project, if I'm not mistaken, right, with the planning board. So when a developer is building, when they talk about the number of units and all that, it's done on a per project basis. Is that correct? So
yeah, so you would come into us with your project, and it would depend, you know, whether or not you're looking to do comprehensive permit or inclusionary, would set the minimum number of LMI units that would need to be included in the design. For comprehensive permit, it would have to be 25%. For inclusionary, it's 20%.
Okay.
And it's lower for inclusionary to try and get people to choose that option rather than the comprehensive permit, because when you go the comprehensive permit route, you're escaping a lot of other zoning requirements that the town would really rather you abide by.
And then they set the percentage of AMI based on a number of factors on either of those, whether they say it's going to be 100% or 120 or...
Well, yeah, the AMI would be proposed by the applicant.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And, you know, a lot of times what we've seen is, you know, people will come in, you know, maybe they'll offer, say that their development requires three units. Maybe two of them will be at 180 and one of them will be at 120. Or maybe... They've asked for some planning waivers as part of their development plan, and the planning board persuades them to throw in an extra LMI unit in order to get their planning waivers. That extra unit may be at a higher AMI than the other one.
Okay.
So there can be a little bit of horse trading that goes on.
Interesting. Okay. But I like having that in there. Because it can cover a lot of ground depending on the size of the project. Any other thoughts? on either this or the form? I mean, the form's pretty innocuous, right? For
the most part. Yeah, I think we pretty much settled on the form at the last meeting.
Yeah.
I put it in there just for completeness sake, so that everybody had it.
What's our next step for putting this into practice? Is this something we have to vote on, or this is part of the? This was just.
I think we would. I don't believe we voted on either of the forms, so I think we would need a vote to adopt both of the forms.
Okay.
And then the town council did want to see what we came up with.
Yeah.
So we would send it back to them, basically in an advisory capacity, I think, to say, okay, here's what we came up with to move this. Process forward.
Sure. Okay. If there's no other discussion, should we move to a vote to put this into practice? Send it over to the town? Do I hear a motion?
I'll make the motion to advance these documents to town council for further consideration for implementation.
Just for clarification, the motion is for both the application and for the second version of the scoring rubric.
Correct. Yep.
Thank you.
We have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you. All right. Let's take a vote on it. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Vote passes to send the application and the second version of the rubric to the town for review.
We'll do that.
All right. Great. All right. Excuse me. I got a lot of stuff here today. Okay. All right. New business. We had a good discussion going. Last time around, and really, this is the same element. The same item put onto this agenda, really to talk about, identify the issues, goals, and priorities for affordable housing. One of the things that Brian forwarded to everybody was the collaborative committee description. And Josh, I was saying before you got here that, you and I were newbies, I think, about the same time. It was a little over 3 years ago now, and there were quite a few people who were on this board for a very long time when we got here, some of them like almost 20 years. So it was a real old school crew here, and Josh and I were the fresh-faced kids. He was a kid. I'm not a kid. But what was helpful for me, because there's so much to this issue. I mean, there's just so many facets and elements to the problem with affordable housing that it was important to go back to kind of the description of like what we're supposed to be doing, right? What are the things that we should be doing, and how do those fit into our meetings in order for just the simple fact of prioritization. What's interesting is that, of course, this document, the description document, references the 2003 the affordable housing study and the plan, whereas we're working on, because I'm not sure if this comprehensive, the town comprehensive plan, if that's been.
Yes, the town comprehensive plan for 2021 is fully adopted.
Fully adopted and in.
So that's what we're working with now. And one of the reasons why I attached the housing element is because now that it is fully developed, we'll be looking at the various boards and committees to help implement the various things within
Correct.
Their given elements of the comprehensive plan.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, the guiding principles section of it alone is really it's going to be good for us to review and use to prioritize. One of the things that when we were working on our last batch of ideas, and ultimately what came out of that was the accessory dwelling unit tax abatement program, and we had a number of things going, and we discussed them for 18 months, I think. one of them was a title buying program. We tried to look at all these different elements. And what part of the reason the accessory dwelling unit portion came out was because it checked off as many of the boxes in here as it could. You know, some of the things, the ideas we came up with really only did, you know, one sort of element of this. What the ADU portion did was, you know, hit a bunch of different elements and hopefully serve a bunch of different communities. It was going to, it's hopefully going to incentivize to increase some density, which is something that the town is trying to do, and you can read that all throughout this document. Increase rental units, and because they have to be year-round, they can't be short-term, and they're pretty small. Regardless of whether someone makes it an affordable unit or not, the rent's going to be relatively low, right? It has a number of implications for seniors. When Laura Lee was here last meeting, she did mention that their number one need, when I asked her what was the most, currently what's the number one need, the senior population. You know, a family like myself, we might build an accessory dwelling unit to move my mother or father into, or vice versa. Your mother or father may have a home that they can build one in, and they can rent the larger house for income. So it kind of gives these options. So that's how we trudged through that process to come up with that particular program, because we felt like it hit as many of these elements as possible. So I think as we're brainstorming and moving forward with new ideas, which hopefully we're going to start to accumulate here, keep those in mind. Refer to that document. It's 40 pages, the part that Brian sent. There's a lot in there. There's a lot of really good statistical information in there, and there's a lot of information about what's going on that, you know, things that are already in motion. The different zoning policies and all these certain things that are certainly going to help. But I think you'll get a lot of ideas from that, from looking in there and reviewing that information, and also just going through the guided principles portion.
Can I make a comment?
Well, please.
Yeah. Because I was reading through this section, and I thought...
please do.
Yeah, because one of the things that I thought of was being able to go to the town and say, you know, what pieces of land are open for development. And I read in here, if I read it correctly, that approach has been done before, but it wasn't extremely helpful because just because there's land available doesn't necessarily mean that it's, like, shovel ready for development. I don't know if I interpreted that correctly, but one of the things I was thinking of was, could the town provide, you know, land that's either owned by the town or owned by the state that could potentially be used for affordable housing development? But I'm not sure, like, if that's been successful in the past or not.
That's a good question. Yeah. How much of that has happened? I mean, we have town-owned affordable housing currently. I don't know how much of that is new or when the last time one of those was built, or it's an interesting question.
I think most of the, when you say town-owned, you mean the housing authority property. I mean, most of that housing is getting pretty old and needs to be upgraded, replaced, redone, and I think that's something that Laura Lee is looking at as part of a long-term future plan. I know housing discussions, I participated in an online discussion with Housing RI, and they talk about Champaign Heights on Curtis Corner and how underutilized that property is. With proper planning and design work, you could probably fit a considerable number of additional units on that land. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having a piece of property is only one part of the puzzle. You then need to use it in an efficient manner. And, you know, the other consideration is any property that you are looking at to add a substantial number of units to is going to have to sort of be in the core of the town and the sewer services area, because you're not going to be able to do a huge development in an area that's going to be reliant on septic systems. You can do single family, duplexes, maybe triples, but once you get above that, you're sort of stretching the capabilities of a septic system.
For already existing housing that is designed to serve like moderate to low income households, are there any, like, the ADU has the tax abatement or tax benefit tied to it. Is there anything like that for like units of already built affordable housing, or is that something that the town would consider?
I believe that any deed-restricted low-income houses, low-moderate-income houses, by state statute, can be offered a tax exemption by the town.
And that's something that the owner or the manager of the property would have to request for to the town, right?
Towns can only exempt properties from taxes if they are allowed to do it by law. So they are allowed to exempt it, but then the towns have to implement that with a local ordinance. All right. We did a little bit of that with the tax abatement ordinance for newly created low-income housing to try and create the incentive to develop that housing. But we did not look back to existing ones to automatically extend that abatement. Some may already have it. I would have to look it up. I don't know.
But there is, for newly created housing, there is that ability for that. Okay.
If you build a house and you put a 30-year deed restriction on it, you can apply for the exemption under the ordinance that we just passed. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Earlier when we were mentioning Champaign Heights, I remember there used to be a time where there were buses that went on Curtis Corner, and for some reason the buses stopped. Don't know why, but that would be nice to, and I know that's not really in the hands of Housing Authority. RIPTA used to stop right in front of Champaign Heights. That was a bus stop there. Yeah. So, you know, I would like to see that come back, because I remember when, you know, there are many, many families that live there with very small children and, you know, traveling to the grocery store with a bunch of groceries and carriages and little ones that are walking and toting laundry, you know, it's tough. And that was my biggest, I was, you know, advocating for the laundry for that reason. You know, we're not on the bus line, and that would have been nice to have that access.
Yeah, I actually find that kind of surprising, and I will look into
that.
Because if you're living in housing like that,
you're a mile away from the closest. And the closest bus stop is right on that busy road of South Kingstown, where there are no shelters, nowhere to sit. You know, standing there with children and carriages, it's kind of easy to get hit.
It's on the corner of 108 and Curtis Corner, I think, right?
Yeah, yep. That's the closest. And then the closest one to that is, of course, right across the street from Mobile. And then, you know, on the opposite would be, you know, It's a hike, especially.
Yeah, no, that's a long walk from Curtis Corner to Kingstown Road. Yeah. If you're schlepping kids or bags or laundry bags or whatever. So yeah, I'm actually kind of shocked, and I'll see what I can do to look into that.
Would that be a town thing?
What?
Would that be a town? Would that be a question that the town would ask RIPTA to bring that back?
I can reach out to RIPTA and find out, you know, what happened. I know RIPTA hasn't had an easy, you know, decade or so, and they've been continuously cutting back routes, but that would seem to be an extra consideration for any route that served that area, because you have a population that really depends on having that mode of transportation.
Right. I don't know when the appropriate time is to speak on. I did attend the last September 27th, their Board of Commission meeting. I'm ready to talk about it whenever you guys are ready to hear it. I don't know. It's not really on the agenda, but I would like to speak on what I learned when I attended that meeting.
Christian, I mean, you were going through the mission statement and I don't know what else you wanted to do with item 6A before we move on to something new.
Yeah, I mean, what Callie's going to talk about is probably part of part of the mission statement via part of the guiding principles that are in the housing portion here. So I think it's appropriate to add it to the discussion. I don't think it needs
okay.
a new.
Okay. So, I mean, we'll look at this as part of our issue prioritization for things to work on in the upcoming year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. September 27th, I attended the South Kingston Housing Authority meeting, and I learned quite a few things, interestingly. I thanked Ms. Laura Lee Costello for attending our Affordable Housing Collaborative meeting. I did learn that the self-sufficiency program and the housing choice voucher, when I asked them about those two lists, she reiterated, you know, there's not enough interest, but I asked her if that could be part of the next agenda, and she said it would be for the board to, you know, discuss. Of course, they would have to discuss that. And the housing choice voucher, I know that there are a list, and it includes South Kingston local resident, working and elderly, veteran, homeless, date and time of application. And I questioned when Laura Lee was here, when she was explaining that to us, there is not a spot on that list for domestic violence victims. That was a huge concern for me. For many reasons. And, you know, she said, well, a couple of the commissioners said, well, when you're homeless, you know, that includes that. I said, absolutely, it does not. I said, because not all victims are homeless. Or, you know, victims are still living with their abuser. So it would be very important to put that on the top of the list. And again, they said that would be up for discussion and, you know, they'd bring it back to the table.
And that the choice thing, that was the, was that the voucher for the down payment funds? Was it that?
Section 8. Self-sufficiency program is the same program that Narragansett Housing Authority has.
Yeah.
That part of your rent that you pay will actually go towards purchase of a new home if
yeah.
you choose to buy a home. Yes. I was anticipating getting information about the next meeting when that would be. They had one on Monday, but I guess they canceled it. So I'm still waiting to hear, you know, when that is going to be. And I also learned that there was November 1st is supposed to be their grand opening for their laundry facility. However, they ran into some difficulties with the machines. Most of them didn't work. Some of them were missing pieces, which is, you know, another concern that I, you know, with having a development like that. So I don't know what's going to happen. They may have to push it out for another date, but I don't know. I think if we were to, I'm not sure what we can do as a board and what we can do to help support the Housing Authority, but raising up these concerns, I'm hoping we can work together as a team and help in some way.
I don't know what happened with the machines. I do know that I talked to Laura Lee as part of her submitting invoices for CDBG reimbursement, and she mentioned that a number of the machines showed up without parts.
Yeah.
I guess our supply chain situation in the country right now is such that they're wow. sending out half-built pieces of equipment. Either that or it may be that the machines were complete, but the payment system that works with the machines was a separate add-on component. I don't know. But whatever it was, they didn't have a complete working system there.
I just know, speaking to the families, they're anticipating, especially when they're not on the bus line. So it's a huge, you know.
Getting appliances right now is difficult in any purview. Getting a stove, getting an electric stove to put into a house right now, builders are struggling to get those in. when we do construction loans, we're not supposed to lend the final bit of money until the house is 100% complete and functional. And we've had to rewrite those rules because we're finding that many of them are finishing the house and there's no appliances. There's not a washing machine. There's nothing because they can't get them. And it's the supply thing. Showing up half completed is interesting. I haven't heard that one. but it doesn't surprise me based on what I'm seeing. What's interesting, Callie, is I think in one of the things that when I was reading through this information, you know, I was trying to look for things that we haven't really talked about. And one of the things that I came up in both sections, in the older description, conduct an annual educational meeting regarding affordable housing issues in the community. It comes up again, actually, as in our guiding principles, the very first bullet point, educating the public on affordable housing issues. We've talked about this in previous meetings, because even with the ADU program, you know, it's out there. We don't know if anybody even knows about it. I mean, just because that's just the nature of we hope people know about it. But I'd like to put that on maybe for let folks think about it a little bit and put that on the next agenda to come with some ideas of, as far as I know, I don't think we've done any kind of educational outreach as far as like a, and I could be mistaken, as far as like a group meeting. I don't know if we tagged along with a town hall meeting or something, but some ideas for some things that we could do or maybe that we could sponsor and help with. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's an event we have to have here or an event we have to plan. It could be something in connection with the Housing Authority, for example, and then maybe in connection with, I went to an event 2 years ago where the Rhode Island Builders Association were there and they were talking about, you know, their challenges. You know, we have money and we have materials and men and we have no land. You know, it was one of those types of events. Rob was actually there. So I think the education piece.
If,
yeah.
If you could put together a series of presentations on different topics,
yeah,
we could do it here. Although this room it's pretty difficult to find time in. But there are other rooms available throughout town where we could find space. You know, it might be, you know, maybe doing it over at Curtis Corner Middle School where we're close to at least one of the Housing Authority areas would work. I'm sure we could make arrangements for a gym or a cafeteria or something, or a
rec center or something, right? Do they
do? The rec center has two meeting rooms, which can be opened up into a big meeting room, so that's an option as well.
Yeah, we did that shortly before we joined the Affordable Housing Collaborative Committee. I volunteered with some of the folks who were on it and did an educational meeting.
Oh, good. Okay.
In that space, exactly, and it was very well attended, and space.
Yeah, I think if we were to do something like that, I think that would be a good opportunity to bring Brenda from Housing Works Rhode Island in, because they did a whole, they do a housing fact book every year. They just did the release of their 2021 fact book that basically paints a picture of housing affordability across the state and then breaks it down by county and then breaks it down by town. So there's town fact sheets. So
all about bringing the experts in.
She is great at that. So depending on like what the content of the presentation and how long we want it to be, I think she'd be a good person to bring in to just kind of show this is what we're seeing, this is what the median price is for a home in South Kingstown, this is the income needed to afford it, and this is how many households based off of these numbers are cost burden, et cetera. And then I think it would be a good opportunity too to talk about what this committee does and what as we're kind of relooking at our mission statement here, because we still have one vacancy, right? Two. Megan.
Right now we have one new person coming on, which will leave us with one.
So assuming that if that seat is still not filled, that could also be an opportunity to say, you know, here's the why, and then and who are we, and how we play a role in addressing this issue. So it could kind of serve multiple.
Add some question and answer time.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that? Everybody think about it, and think about how you'd like that to look. We're being on the 8th of December, 8th or 9th.
Yeah.
Let's try and hash that out a little bit and figure out what we would do for a meeting, where.
Think of a couple of topics, maybe a couple of guest preventers, maybe a couple of activities that might, you know, provide some good information. Think about a timeline, because, you know, maybe set a date for yourself in the spring where you want to do it, and how you're going to advertise it, get the word out, that kind of thing. That's all part of making a successful event.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you can find a sponsor to supply some food or beverages, give people free food. It helps.
That always works. That always works, yeah.
It's a great way to build community relationship.
We're a food-motivated community, yeah. I think. yeah, that's great. I think going back a couple steps to the points that Callie was bringing up, too, and as we're looking at what we are doing as a collaborative, we can maybe define, because I think what you're saying is important, and I think that what I'm struggling to do is define, like, based off of the definitions of our committee, find out, like, how we can assist in the points that Callie's bringing up. I think last time we talked about some of the issues that folks living in Housing Authority housing are experiencing, and, like, what role does this committee have in addressing those issues, whether, like, do we have any authority or what can we do as a board if we are all in agreement that we want these issues that Callie's raising to be addressed, or at least some type of, because it sounds like they're going to talk about it at their next board meeting, which is that a public meeting?
But it's not a guarantee, because I asked for it to be on the agenda, and in order for it to be on the agenda, it needs to be up for discussion. I've been there, done that. I know sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. They say they're going to talk about it, but don't. But I do have, I want to rebuild that relationship with them, because my experience for almost 10 years living there wasn't a great experience at all. So I'm hoping that if we write some kind of letter to them and ask, more of like an ask and not a demand, because we don't get far when we demand things, is maybe a letter, and then have a support letter,
like a testimonial. I don't know what they're like when.
I'm not sure what you would call it, but it was like a list of asks for them.
You guys decide as a group what you want me to, what you want to say. I'll be glad to draft a letter for Christian's signature as the chair of the board, and we can send it across to them.
I'm wondering how receptive they might be. It's been this perennial issue that they're a separate entity and that they don't, you know, really answer to the town council, say, or other sort of town entities. I'm sort of wondering if you could float the idea. I know they've had some change on their board as well, and I'm wondering if, you know, you could float the idea of some sort of liaison representative from this group on that, you know, making that into something. Obviously, it would be at their discretion as an entity, but it would show a lot of good faith on their part to really try to build that bridge with the town.
Well, that's
a really good
suggestion.
Yeah.
And actually, when she was here last week, or last meeting, last week, she had mentioned that, you know, they would like to do some collaboration, but she also was fairly clear that they have an organization, you know, that's their organization and that's what they do, and they're governed by state guidelines. Remember a couple of times when you brought up the domestic violence thing, she said it's not in the state description or something, you know, and it was sort of like a little deflating, but, you know, we're bumping up, I guess, at that point, right? But the liaison thing would probably go over a lot better, and does give you the opportunity to have, you know, a little bit of some sharing of ideas. You know, it's almost like we would get to have somebody from their group with us each meeting, like we do with planning, and vice versa.
So. Or the other way around, to having someone here be a liaison to that.
Yeah.
In some formal way. I don't know whether it would be, you know, how it would work for them. As you said, they're governed by state statute, which also means some of the advocacy probably has to go through the state to a certain extent, you know, the state reps. And,
yeah, that's interesting.
But building in some sort of, like, structural... Because it seems like the problem is also structural, that they are a separate entity and don't have that sort of formal accountability in that way to the town.
And because I was a tenant there, I'm not sure I would be the one to be the liaison, unfortunately. I just, you know, given the history, I do have faith. I want to put that on record. I do have faith that the new board is willing to do better. It's just they've taken on a lot of and inherited a lot of, you know, misuse of, you know, funds and stuff. So,
well, also look at it from the glass half full side, is that you have a new board that's just come out the backside of a lot of turmoil. So it could be an opportunity to form a new relationship with a new group. So.
Right.
Interesting.
On your on the educational event, I really do think, or events, or however, you know, public charter. I was thinking about the things that this group has passed and the public knowledge or not of those things, you know, around the fund that that people are probably not as aware of, and you'll now have, you know, an application process and more guidelines around that, and around the accessory dwelling unit stuff. I think that would be warranted to have some sort of interactive engagement on the
public. I think that'd be a big part of it, and even the things that are happening already that are in the comprehensive plan of, you know, things that are going to be, that are happening and are going to be happening. We have developments being, that are getting ready to be built that have affordable housing units in them. People may not even realize that, you know, like the, you know, the development on Curtis Corner, everybody's driving by and going, oh my God, what's happening there, may not realize that it's got, is it, I think it's got 8 affordable units in it, right? And that project came before us to take a peek at, you know, and we pass along the town. So there's a process there, and it just education of what we do, what's going on now, and what's happening. One of the biggest things that I've seen, I did some research this week about, because, you know, this affordable issue is not South Kingstown, it's not Rhode Island, it's the whole country. I mean, in other areas, there are areas in the country that have it even worse than we do. You know, one of the biggest things is the education part, because there can be, you know, there's misinformation and even like a stigma when you say affordable housing. People don't necessarily understand what it is. When you start talking about high density housing, people get all, you know, oof, but what's it going to do to the town? And there's a lot of that in the comprehensive plan. And there's been a lot of discussion at some of the town meetings from folks that have gotten up and said, I don't know if I necessarily want that. I think education is going to be a big step forward in that. And nothing helps you spread the word like, you know, the facts and the good, and giving them the good idea. Here's why. And I think part of it too is, you know, this affordable housing to me is the issue, is really the foundation of a whole bunch of other issues. And also that element is, you know, guides principles for the town. And we're seeing that in action right now. And I'll use the voting down of the school bond, right? Fairly unheard of for a community like ours to vote that down, and by a huge margin. As the town, you know, the town demographics are getting older and we're having less families come in, affordable housing units are a big part of that. And as that starts to happen, you know, the priorities change, and things like building a new school starts to become second priority to other things. So we're seeing that change happening now. And that's where it starts to affect how the community is. You know, when I broke my ankle skateboarding on the URI campus when I was 17, and I went to the emergency room, and my neighbor was the x-ray tech, and my aunt was a nurse, and, you know, that's because everybody lived here, because you could afford to live here. And that's getting increasingly different. New teachers, new police officers are living outside of our town, even though they're working in our town. The whole point of having, of living in a small town like this, is you do have that charm of kind of knowing everybody. My wife and I were just reminiscing about when my daughter was four, and you know, the first time we put the little one on the bus, and you're like freaking out, and the bus driver pulls up, and I literally went to Peacedale School with this girl driving the bus, and we knew each other. I'm like, oh, thank God it's Tracy. That's wonderful. You know, I mean, that you don't, you're going to lose that as we price people out of the town. You lose that charm. You lose the ability to know people. We certainly have had a lot of friends and family forced to move since, you know, since we graduated from high school in 1990 and went to college and decided to stay to raise our families here. And we've seen more and more people leave. So it's just, that's the, I mean, that's just the baseline. You know, that's the housing prices, you know, never mind what's happening with wages and what's happening. I mean, there's so many different issues in there. So that education part, I think, is huge. Because as, you know, as I was at a lot of the town meetings and seeing people voting and talking about different things with the town, I thought there's a big picture here that I think a lot of people might be missing out on, you know, and that's, this is probably a big piece of it. So
I think it's a conversation of, like, sustainability too, and
that's exactly what
you can talk about your points and couple that with the, you know, once this is, this rubric that we've created is finalized of, you know, the CDBG program is a great example. I talk to constituents all the time, especially our older population who are in need of critical home repairs, and trying to point them in a direction that is, you know, in some cases it's the ELKS program or Neighbors Helping Neighbors, but a lot of folks don't realize that the CDBG program exists and how accessible that is. Yeah. So I think educating folks on what's existing already would be helpful. But then to express the need, again, I'm speaking from my perspective at South County Habitat. It was a week ago we released that we had added two more homes to our list of homes available for sale, one of them being a new home in South Kingstown. And since then, I've talked to 50 people interested in affordable home ownership. So I can definitely attest to the fact that the need is there. And so I think it's just a matter of, it's a combined effort of the education and also, you know, what, how we think about land development and land use, because we do have, and I know Jen's talked about it a couple times, like the, we love our open space and conserving our open space. So maybe also trying to have a conversation with the land trust about, you know, how can we work together to continue to conserve the space that we all love and love having, but also be aware of our housing needs. And, you know, especially because as someone who went to the University of Rhode Island, I feel very fortunate that I was able to get a job here and stay here. And I'm a renter in town, and it's not cheap at all. But I see so many of those students who occupy so much housing, and then they graduate and they leave for, you know, jobs outside of the state or for maybe better housing options. And so that's really not sustainable in the sense of we're not even retaining the talent that we're supporting as the town that hosts this great university. So I definitely, just again, just kind of echoing what you're saying, I think there's a lot of different perspectives that need to be brought to the conversation. And I think it's always hard when you do a public education presentation because you want people to attend and go, because it's usually people get really ambitious and passionate about this subject, whether they're for affordable housing or have other thoughts, when affordable housing is, you know, at the 11th hour of something being developed, because people either want to see it happen or don't want to see it happen. So hopefully, you know, what we can try and do as a committee is just bring as much publicity to an event that we try to plan in the springtime, perhaps, to try and get as many folks at that conversation, because I think last evening, actually, Narragansett invited us, me and Jen, to come to their affordable housing collaborative meeting, because they are, you know, we were able to kind of toot our horn a little bit and talk about what we've accomplished so far, because it sounded like Narragansett had a committee and then it had not been very active, and they're getting it re-energized. So they're actually looking to us as, like, sort of like modeling what have we tried and how has it worked. And we talked a little bit about the ADU rules that we've put forward, and they were really excited about that and trying that. And they have technically, like, less land that they're working with too, so they have this kind of common issues on you know, would the land that we do have available and increasing housing, what could that look like for Narragansett? So I also think that, you know, communicating with other committees like ours in Washington County is that, I think that's something that would be appropriate as we try to, like, think about how we want to increase the supply and preserve affordable housing.
Yeah. You know, one of their town council women actually sat in one of our – so I think they just got it started.
They just did. Yeah. It's
like
pretty new.
Maybe even just a few months ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she reached out to us not that long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would it make sense to talk to someone at Narragansett Housing Authority to see how they were able to get their self-sufficiency program up and running and hopefully maybe possibly collaborate with, I don't know who would do the collaboration, would probably be South Kingston Housing Authority, right? But I don't know. Because it said there's not enough... there's not enough interest, but with the numbers,
yeah, I think
there's a lot of interest.
What Brian, what you had suggested was, I think trying to draft out what those items are that you were talking about in that form of a letter. I think that sounds like a good place to start, and then. And maybe in that letter is where we propose the idea of a liaison.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if we were talking like a liaison from our group to go to them or a liaison from them to go to us. And I don't know how that relationship works, but maybe that could be like a, you could state the things that would be considered issues. And then like a proposed solution would be, you know, we recommend whatever. And then as a committee, we would look at that letter, decide if we are all agreeing with what is drafted, and then it would go, it would be, I don't know how that works, and then it would be like...
I sign it.
By you?
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the board would just have to vote on content,
mm-hmm.
give me some direction on what needs to go in the letter. I don't have any problem drafting something, but I need some direction, and it needs to be... a vote of the board, so the board is speaking rather than an individual.
Right.
And in terms of a liaison, you don't need an agreement from them. It's a public meeting. You can go to their meeting at any time, and you could do something like what the planning board does with the technical review committee. So there's, if you're not familiar with the development process, there's something called the Technical Review Committee that reviews development plans, and it's the town engineer, the town planner, a representative from the planning board, a representative from the fire district, the public works director, you know, all of these technical people who review things, and then we'll send written comments and recommendations to the planning board, so they have in-house technical advice coming to them. Mm-hmm. But we don't ask a member of the planning board to commit to doing that extra meeting every month. It's a rotating thing. We ask for a volunteer to go. You could do the same thing here. You could just have either a permanent rotation where one person goes twice a year. However you want to set it up. Or you could have one person who just goes all the time. It doesn't matter.
I don't know if I said it, and this is obviously up to you, and I'm just a planning board liaison here, but, my thought in saying a liaison actually, or I don't know if I said liaison first, but it was really a request for something even potentially more formal than that, if possible, you know, that there would be some sort of shared member potentially between the two. But I don't know, that's probably beyond.
I think it's our two groups operate very differently, right? We're really just an advisory committee for the town council, right? And our purview is to come up with ideas and give it to them. Hopefully they'll say yes, no, maybe, and we work on those. Whereas theirs is to, they're literally running the housing facilities.
Right. That's what correct.
Yeah.
Right.
They appoint the commissioner
on a daily basis. So that's an interesting one. I mean, I don't know how comfortable I feel like proposing a list of sort of like here's things we want done or how to do that in a way that doesn't sound like that. Right. I guess is what I'm getting at, right? Because it's not really our position to do that. But I think maybe to start with, because they did offer some interest in some collaboration, maybe we offer that, right? Maybe the first letter is a little bit more basic and maybe it's just a formal, you know, thank you for attending. We would like to attend your meetings in some regularity or just some sort of handshake thing to get started, because I think it would benefit. And again, one of the guiding principles here says collaborate with other Washington County communities and organizations on housing issues.
And maybe, if you did it more the liaison way and had the rotating sort of thing that someone from the collaborative would attend, might sort of build up a relationship where even though you're not on that board, you may have a certain stature in sort of speaking and they may be more open to things if they keep hearing the same thing being brought up from this group,
Yeah.
So how would we go about drafting a letter?
I was just going to ask the same question out loud.
Is that something that we would put as an agenda item on a future meeting and then come prepared with ideas, or do we submit those via email?
You could do it a number of different ways. You can just spitball ideas at me right now, and I could draft something and put it on the December agenda for you guys to take a look at and edit. We can leave the meeting, and you can individually email me ideas, and I can try and take everybody's input and condense it into a letter to bring back on December 8th.
I have two ideas. Just saying.
We could do both. I would just need to set, a deadline of mid-November.
Yeah.
To get stuff in so that it gives me a little bit of time to work on it before the meeting and get it back out to you so that you have a chance to sit down with it and read it and make suggested edits.
And we made the December 8th. Okay. I'm a fan of having a little homework and getting it. I know, Callie, you have ideas of what you want to contribute, so I guess obviously this is the space for you to say that, what you'd like to see in the letter, but maybe we just have homework for the committee to think about what they'd like to see in that letter.
We've just sent Brian ideas separately. Remember, don't copy everybody.
Yes, don't copy everyone.
Just directly to Brian.
Single reply. By a certain date.
I think Christian has thrown out, and Josh, I think, have thrown out some good ideas, sort of a, hi,
we met
Laura Lee the other week. We think that these are two groups that should spend some time together. We are interested in maybe sending a representative to your meetings on a regular basis to share ideas and communicate, and we can build off of something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a framework right there. Yeah.
Can I tell you my two ideas? Okay. So the Housing Choice Voucher Program waiting list preferences, they did tell me they have at least 30 applicants or 30 vouchers to give out. So there's a four-month thing. So I said, maybe after the 4 months, then you can add that. And then the self-sufficiency program.
You lost me somewhere on that. There's a waiting list.
So the Housing Choice Voucher Program waiting list, there's a priority list.
Okay.
Yeah, so sorry, kind of went. On that list, just add the DV victims, because not all of them are homeless. That was one of them. And there were a couple of commissioners that said, you know what, we didn't think of that. We should have had it on that priority list. So it did resonate. And then the second is the self-sufficiency program for South Kingston Housing Authority, to bring that program back.
I wonder if, I'd like to find out from her, because she said lack of interest, and I can't imagine that that was all.
I also spoke to another person at Narragansett Housing Authority, and it was lack of manpower. So there's two different, which is, makes sense. They have a very small office.
It's tough. Some of those programs are tough, too. We do a lot of Rhode Island Housing at the bank that I work for, and Rhode Island Housing has great programs. They've got grants. They've got city grants. But ultimately, it still comes back to the people being able to qualify. So if you're if you're looking at a low to moderate income qualifying family, they're only going to qualify for so much. And part of the issue we're seeing is just the prices have just surged so far beyond where people can buy that even a lot of these programs, like Rhode Island Housing has a $10,000 grant program that they were doing. And it was utilized, but not as much as they thought, only because it's qualifying in certain areas, it was difficult for them to actually use. Even now, you can do a zero down loan. You can get $15,000 of extra, up to $15,000 in an extra assistance program to cover your down payment and all your closing costs, everything. But the income to qualify for it, you know, is going to keep you at a range where you're going to have a hard time finding a home in that. So I mean, it's like the money part doesn't help if the prices are so far beyond even buying anything, you know, at this point. Anyway, so, all right, so for the next meeting, we're going to add some sort of review of a letter.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to add, everyone's going to bring their idea hats for educational meeting. What do we want it to look like? We don't want it to be 17 hours. I'm just going to warn you. and ideas, you know, Alicia, great idea for bringing in, you know, the Rhode Island Works bring in an expert speaker, and what we want to cover, that sort of stuff. And thirdly, for an agenda item, we haven't had any ideas to kick around in a little while. We spent a lot of time on the accessory dwelling unit and a whole bunch of other things, and it finally all came out in the wash. You know, this is the open forum for, you know, hey, I've got an interesting idea, you know, and come to the next meeting with some ideas if you can. Be amazed what you can find on Google when you type in what are other cities and towns doing for affordable housing, you know. It doesn't take long, and frankly, that's how we got a lot of the ideas that we talked through. So I'd like to add that as an agenda item as well. And that'll probably be an ongoing discussion point for a while until we get a couple of meaty ideas that we can really start kicking around.
Yeah. I'd like to add to your point, I learned about this yesterday in the Narragansett Affordable Housing Collaborative meeting. They had Barbara Fields, who was the former, I believe, CEO, I think that was her title, of Rhode Island Housing. She's very familiar in the housing space, and she had talked about a website called localhousingsolutions.org that I've heard of but never really like dug into, and it's a great, you know, as we're thinking of homework and local housing solutions, it's a good resource to dig into to kind of think creatively. And I would be interested in talking about looking at some of the guiding principles in the plan, looking at the maintenance of existing housing stock, or proper maintenance, I think kind of falls within the umbrella of some of the things that Callie was concerned about with current housing and affordable housing in town. And then also looking at the Neighborhood Opportunities Program that was mentioned in the plan is a state initiative. So I don't know if that's something that we could get more information about to see if that's something we could apply to our community. But definitely thinking about like what resources already exist that we could adopt, but also thinking creatively about like what we could create that, again, just supports the work that we're trying to advise to the town council.
Just to put some ideas out there, if you're poking around to look for things, I think increasing affordable housing is invariably going to raise issues of increasing development densities above what a lot of people are normally associate with South Kingstown, and it might require some creative thinking to push people outside of their comfort zone. There are a lot of development and design ideas out there to allow you to put more housing units in a given area of property, yet still make them appealing through design. We've tried to do that when we adopted the cottage zoning regulations that we just did. So you can put a lot of these small units on a piece of property. The kicker is that you have to agree to abide by certain design guidelines so you don't have 12 little boxes crammed together that look like hell.
We saw some renderings, yeah. I think, right, of some one-acre parcels with little
tinier
houses on them. And well,
I've been to some seminars, and I've seen some people have done unbelievable designs that put an unbelievable number of dwelling units in an incredibly small space, but because of the design work that they put into it, you don't mind because it's interesting and it's nice to look at, and they've arranged things in a way that has a flow to it. You know, we are going to be looking at other aspects of increasing development density. The work that we're continuing to do with Horsley Witten, we should hopefully by the end of the year be looking at the missing middle type stuff, so you'll be looking at that.
Yeah.
I was just told this week that we're going to be looking to apply for some grant funds to maybe start re-looking at the commercial highway district, which is Old Tower Hill Road, the Kingstown Road intersection there. The Economic Development Committee has been pushing us for a number of years to look at changes in that area that will allow for mixed use zoning. So lower level commercial, maybe allowing people to go up 2, 3, maybe 4 stories with, you know, retail on the first floor, office space on the second floor, and residential above that. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But if you don't do it right, I mean, look at the development you have out there, which has sort of been allowed to develop however it wants. If you don't put design restrictions with it, you'll get the same thing. It'll just be 3 or 4 stories tall instead of 1 story tall.
Yeah, I think Church Woods is a development in Charlestown that is, I think it's age-restricted housing. I think it's like 55 or 65 and older, but it's a cottage style that I think was done really well in that it was designed for, you know, like similar to what we had put forward. And I thought of another point, but I just forgot it. So come back to me on that.
I remember, Brian, that I went to a few years ago now. I went to a meeting the Economic Development Commission had with business owners in that commercial highway district, and they were looking at different visual elements of what things could look
like. Visual preference survey.
Visual preference kind of survey, and it was fascinating. I mean, when you think about it, I ask this question all the time. Do you feel like that part of Main Street is more, you know, South Kingstown, or do you feel like if you went down into Wakefield that's the type of Main Street? Well, what are the things where are the design elements there, right? It does go up higher, but it's close, buildings are closer to the street, right? There's more complete street sort of stuff going on. It's all these things that, to me, that strikes me as just a ripe opportunity for a type of density of housing and mixed use that would be both attractive for multiple reasons, for affordable housing reasons, but also for transportation reasons and for economic development, business development kind of stuff as well. There's another point I was going to make about that, but that actually, and it does relate a little bit to some conversations we're having on the planning board as well about missing middle and about not exactly form-based code, but definitely thinking more about these design elements. How do we think about, like, Jamie Rabbit, the planning director, has the planning board doing some homework, getting sort of visuals of what sort of things in town and what sort of things out of town we look at and say, this is sort of more of what we think South Kingstown should look like. This is the sort of the best of South Kingstown. I just went up to Burlington, Vermont a month ago and was looking at a particular building and seeing, like, this is exactly the sort of stuff that I think we've been talking about in the comprehensive planning for the town a lot. You know, it was a complete street sort of thing. It was a street that was as heavily traveled as 108 for sure. And they had built, very nicely where the sidewalk was separated from the street by a row of trees in between. And then there was another sort of green space. And then there was the building that used to be totally commercial and was redone to be mixed-use development. And so it did have exactly sort of what you're talking about, Brian, where it was, you know, the frontage was, you know, cafe and business, you know, that was friendly in that way and inviting. And what you saw was that it was a heavily traveled road like 108, but people were very comfortably sitting inside and outside of that building, and there was a lot of, and people were walking up and down that sidewalk, and you could just tell it was like, that's what you're talking about when you're talking about that kind of development. It's actually much more desirable than what we have in that commercial highway district right now. Nobody wants to walk, you know, it's not an inviting sort of space.
Mm-hmm. My favorite is when I've heard the discussions about you can put in apartments or small condos above, you know, the Wakefield Mall, and somebody said, oh, that would be ugly. I'm like, why is the Wakefield Mall attractive? like we couldn't make it any uglier.
Yeah, preserve the beauty of the Wakefield Mall.
Yeah, really. The nostalgia. All right, well, we definitely have a lot to talk about at the next meeting. So any other discussion on that, or are we okay to move on?
Yeah, and in terms of the housing element from the comprehensive plan, I can see that a bunch of you have started reading into it, and that when you get to the back, you'll find tables of implementation schedules and policies, goals, and actions. So those are the things where we'll be asking you to try and guide us on implementing, you know, what are ideas for getting those things done that we've committed to trying to do. And Callie, do you want me to print out a copy of that for you? Because you you had printer issues.
Yes.
Okay,
please.
So give me a second after the meeting and I'll run it off downstairs.
Okay.
Thinking more formally, and I know I've talked a lot about on the planning board liaison side of things, I'm going to bring back, you know, the discussions about the educational event or events and thinking that, you know, as you're educating on what this group is doing and on the maybe state of housing, you know, and having someone from Housing Works come, it may be good to think about how we coordinate with the planning board as well and some of the educational stuff.
Of course.
I think the housing element of the comprehensive plan is like a natural place for this entity and the planning board to sort of jointly present and engage the community to say, like, this isn't, you know, a lot of times when people say here affordable housing, so much of the education is just like around educating people against sort of the misconceptions they have about affordable housing, right? And so having the ability to say, no, this is actually a really thoughtful part of our comprehensive plan for the kind of development that we want in our town. So yeah, just to say that I'll bring that back to the planning board to talk about connecting with your education a bit.
Excellent, great. All right, update from staff on planning department activities.
I think I probably covered what I had to say. Like I said, I just got word this week about the grant application on mixed use. So that's a combination commercial and housing issue where we'll be looking for your input as well as EDC and planning. And I think that's about it. Trying to think. I don't believe we've seen any new affordable housing projects come back in. An old project on Old North Road out towards Stony Fort. It went under the name of Fieldstone Farms. It started the planning process, went up to the State Housing Appeals Board over the low mod aspect. The state sided with us, and now it's back down with us, and it is under active discussion again. So we may be seeing that shortly with some affordable units in it. The sticking point with the first time around was that they wanted to do a single-family housing development and stick all of the affordable units in accessory dwelling units.
I remember hearing about that.
And yes. The planning board said, no, it's you're creating basically second-class citizens by only allowing them in the ADUs, and said that they wouldn't approve that, and the Housing Appeals Board agreed with that. The law says there has to be consistency between the market rate units and the affordable units.
You're not supposed to be able to tell the difference. You should.
Right. Yeah. So the discussion now is going along the lines of it will be single-family development, and single-family will be the affordable units. That doesn't mean it won't change. I think what the planning board wanted to see was more consistency. So if that's not to say there couldn't be some ADUs, you just can't stuff all of the LMI into ADUs. Mm-hmm. So we'll wait and see what they come back with.
Interesting.
Yeah, they came to the meeting this week, but to talk about the sidewalks and
the sidewalks.
Yeah, they did a nice job, actually, what they presented. I remember that discussion, and I hope they do come back with something much better. I'm glad that they sided with us on that, because it really wasn't acceptable from my view.
Yeah. So they ran into trouble right at master plan, if I remember correctly. So they have not gotten master plan approval. So even their initial approvals, they're basically starting from the very beginning of the process.
All right. Very good. Next meeting is Thursday, December 8th at 7 p.m. And I guess other than that, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No nays. I just look at Kenny every single time.
This is your time to shine.
I just get stage fright and forget the word. I'm like, motion.